Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go live in Los Angeles on a Wednesday. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs. It's Wednesday. Be a sub above. Now, 1 hour from now, so we are now in mid-July. 1 hour from now, over the next 2 days, at 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern, I will, and I've spent a lot of time on this because I have no life. Today, I give you my AFC predictions. All the divisions, all the teams, playoff order. Tomorrow, the NFC, but today is the AFC. I am allowed 2 amendments due to trades or injuries before the season. Listen, the Constitution has 27 amendments. I get 2. So I get 2 amendments. I will now, Joy, how did I do last year, for instance, in the AFC?
You did very well.
7 for 7.
That's pretty good.
We nailed all the playoff teams. So when I was with my kids this weekend and I told them I was taking naps, I was actually breaking down the AFC and the NFC, and we'll have it today. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, it's important that you remind everyone that the Constitution has been changed.
It has been.
Several times.
Amendments are okay.
I don't know if everyone knows that.
Yeah. So I'm going to get 2 amendments, and one of them could be the Aaron Rodgers amendment.
That's an important one to hold on to.
Because I don't think there's a chance he will not finish the year in Green Bay, but he'll start it. I want to start with that. So Chris Collinsworth has a podcast, as you'd expect. It's very good. He had Adam Schefter on. He's a very diligent NFL reporter, lives on that phone, baby. He's breaking stories all the time. So when he talked about Brady leaving New England a year before he left, you got to kind of take respect for it and go, put some respect on that. He knows what he's doing. He's talking about Aaron Rodgers right now and the feelings in Green Bay, and here it is.
It just has never sounded like it's about money. I think this is much deeper than that. I think this is, as he himself has alluded to, about people, about culture, about the way the organization is and has run. And I don't know that money addresses that.
I want to talk about this for a second because I think I'm in a rare position. Joy and I are in a rare position. We weren't born in Los Angeles or California. We have bounced around the country. So I have literally changed jobs and moved across the country 3 different times. So I can speak to this. As a driven, somewhat workaholic guy, and Aaron did not get here because he's casual and occasionally throws a football around. Aaron's a grinder. Aaron's a workout guy. Aaron is very committed to football. And I've always thought, and I think Joy is too, I think we're committed to broadcasting. 3 different times, I knew I was leaving before my company did. And even as a grinder, even as somebody that's totally into their job, I couldn't concentrate. I was thinking about the next job while I was in that job, because I didn't want to fail. And I'm thinking about, okay, I got to get prepared. I'm going to save some of my rants. That's a good idea. I'm going to make sure to do that. I couldn't concentrate. My last 6 months at the other place, all I could think about was Fox. Who am I going to hire? What's the set going to look like? Who's going to be on the news desk? What producers? I couldn't concentrate. And I'm a committed guy. I would have rants and I'd be like, no, I'm going to save that one. That's good. Fox gets that one. And so here's Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is moody when he's happy. He's aloof when he's happy. What's this year going to be like? Like, I look at all this stuff with Green Bay. Really, they're a default champion of this division because there's so much dysfunction. Chicago's pivoting to a new quarterback. Minnesota, we got Kirk Cousins, can't play well in big games. Detroit's a mess. And I think to myself, this was never an ideal fit. Aaron and Green Bay, in the good times, it wasn't ideal. He's very much a contrarian thinker. He's very much an independent thinker. He's California cool, and they wear cheese hats in their 50s. It wasn't ideal. What's it going to be like now? And I'll be on an island, but I do believe that he lost a little bit of trust with his coach, though he'd never say it publicly. Matt LaFleur, the last play that Aaron Rodgers played in Green Bay, his coach took him off the field to kick a field goal against Tom Brady. Trust is hard to repair. I think oftentimes Aaron Rodgers, I would not blame him if he prioritized staying healthy in Green Bay. He doesn't want to, you know, he's not happy. Wouldn't you prioritize throwing the ball away, you know, taking a knee, sliding early? The last thing you want to do is get hurt in Green Bay. I wouldn't blame him. I've been there. You start prioritizing the next place. And that doesn't mean you're not committed to your craft. It's just very human to do that. And I'm on an island, and I'll say this. Nobody believes the trade will happen during the season. But it's very unique in that we got a bunch of things working here. What if Jordan Love is pretty darn good in the preseason? He should be. This is a good O-line, a solid head coach, star receiver, star back. What if Jordan Love's pretty good? What if Drew Lock struggles in the AFC West? Yeah, that's going to happen. And what if Aaron is a little condescending, not all in, temperature in the room is a little cool, not warm. Look at the schedules on this. I know I'm on an island, but look at the schedules on this. If you look at Green Bay's schedule with Aaron, even if Aaron was 90% locked in, this is a schedule that tells me they're going to win. They're going to beat New Orleans in the opener. They're going to beat Detroit. Good luck going to San Francisco, but the Steelers at home, Washington at home, Arizona. It's very possible that Green Bay is a 6-1 start. It's a 6-1 start going to like an Arizona. The trading deadline will be around that Arizona week. Then you look at Denver's schedule. Denver's schedule, again, with Drew Lock. You open at the Giants. Good luck. Now, you'll beat Jacksonville and the Jets, but it's Baltimore. It's at Pittsburgh. It's at Cleveland. It's Washington. It's at Dallas. Those are losses. So I'll say this. Trading deadline is week 8. Keep your eye on Jordan Love looking solid in preseason. Aaron's the kind of guy that could go into a locker room in Denver immediately. Remember, Vic Fangio's gone if he's under 500. So there's some urgency in Denver. Aaron can be, you know, a little difficult in the good times. What's this going to be like? So I do believe in the trading deadline, there will be discussions to move Aaron to the AFC. Denver will be fairly desperate. The Chargers, many are predicting, are a Super Bowl team, and I'm talking gamblers are into that. We know Kansas City's better. You got a young GM in Denver, an old coach, and a quarterback nobody truly believes in. Keep your eyes on this stuff. I will say, I think Aaron Rodgers' trade deadline is a viable move. Of course, by that time, it'll be too late for one of my amendments to my predictions in the NFL, which on 1 hour from now, I'll be doing the AFC today, the NFC tomorrow. So here's another story that came down. So Kawhi Leonard of the Clippers had surgery to repair a partial tear of his right ACL. Here's what's interesting about this. Our worldview on the Clippers forever, fittingly, has been awful franchise. Ridiculous, bad, but we all know that we used to roll our eyes at the Cubs, and then Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon showed up. And then we were like, oh, like 3 years later, they're in the World Series, right? 3 or 4 years later. So you can turn things if you get the right owner. The Ricketts family, Joe Maddon, Theo Epstein, all very smart people. The laughable Cubs went to the great Cubs farm system overnight. And we think that way with the Clippers. Ty Lue had a great playoff series. Steve Ballmer is energized and focused. And they have a lot of people in that front office. I know a lot of them. They're really smart. And Kawhi has a player option. And it's really funny. He could sign for 1 year with the Clippers, $36 million, or 4 years and $180 million. And my guess, he's going to go to the $181 million. He's a California kid. But you know what's interesting? Is that there's this sense that teams are desperate to get stars. But I think with the Suns and Chris Paul, if Chris said, I want 1 year at $40 million, I think they'd take it. I do think they'd take it. If they win the finals, one more, they take it. And I think the Clippers are not a desperate team anymore. And I think Kawhi is so odd and so unique and so different and so nonverbal, which you'd prefer your stars are verbal. I think the Clippers privately would take that 1 year deal for $36 million. They have a new arena in 3 years. They have an energized, focused, rich owner, excellent coach, very good roster. I thought Paul George had a very strong B plus A minus. No, I think he had an A postseason. I thought Paul George, as we thought he would do, had a very good postseason. So it's interesting to watch? Are we looking at kind of the Cubs here, where they were roll your eyes franchise, desperate for anybody? You know, I mean, the Cubs were for a long time, you know, Lou Piniella's interested, we'll sign him forever, right? Like, that's what the Cubs were. And all of a sudden, you kind of wake up one morning and you're like, nah, this really isn't a desperate franchise. This morning in Los Angeles, the Clippers have a much better roster than the Lakers do. The Clippers have what many perceive as a much better front office than the Lakers do. The Clippers have the much richer owner than the Lakers do. And by the way, Paul George, say what you want, is there every day. Anthony Davis, not so much. So I do think if the Clippers privately could choose 4 years with Kawhi or a year, I think they choose a year at this point. I really do. And it speaks well to the growth of the franchise. So Big Ben, oh, this is a big deal. The story out this morning is Big Ben, he is doing sit-ups this offseason. He is in the best shape of his life, and I'll have thoughts coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Suns Bucks Game 4, your Discover Card Key matchup. They match all the cash back you earn on your credit card. End of the first year automatically, no limits, discover.com/yes. Good to have you in. So we got some NFL talk today. There's a Russell Wilson story I'll address later. There's a Big Ben story. So Big Ben, this is the story out of Pittsburgh. That's Joy's hometown. A Big Ben reportedly in the best shape of his life, according to sources. According to Ben's camp, he is losing weight. Is his elbow in better shape is the question I worry about. And I've never really thought the Steelers would be better if Big Ben was skinnier. That's not something I've worried about. He's a big guy. You know, the question that begs to be asked is what took so long? Losing weight means you needed to lose weight as a professional athlete. That I think LeBron, Russell Wilson, and Tom Brady and Mahomes have moved past the I've got to lose weight this offseason. So congratulations on only two natty lights after dinner and sit-ups. But this is, you know, this is the classic. You want to sell your house. And you never really invested in it for 20 years. You let the plumbing go, the air conditioning unit, the landscaping, but you put some new paint on the house and you think you're going to fool people and sell it for top dollar. Well, you're not going to fool a savvy investor or a savvy home buyer, and you're not going to fool an inspector because you put on some nice paint. Okay, the bottom line here is Brady and Russell Wilson are committed to film study. They're committed to diets. They're committed to plyometrics. They're committed seven figures annually to being in shape. They're also both highly committed to film study and audible systems and working with coaches. Big Ben, even Jay Glazer, who's got great relationships with players, probably more than any NFL reporter in my life, makes fun of Ben's off-season workout regimen. I'm not sure it can be called that. Brady is a 24/7, 365-day-a-year quarterback, and he is sprinting to the finish. Ben is committed when the whistle blows in camp to when it ends in January, earlier than everybody in Pittsburgh wants. He's limping to the finish line. You can't fool an inspector on a house. You can't fool somebody that knows real estate on a coat of paint. You fool dopes. And you can't fool people who know football because now you're doing sit-ups and you've cut back on your old Milwaukee's after dinner. Now, in 45 minutes, I'll give you my AFC preview, but I'll give you the AFC North now without going into deep explanations. I have the Pittsburgh Steelers as a sub-500 team in third place. And 8 wins, I think, considering the state of their O-line, is being gracious. That's an 8-9 football team. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
I think I imagine Big Ben is more of like a IPA guy.
Okay.
You know.
Hazy IPA. You can get one of those at Herd Burger, Joy. They're fantastic.
You know.
They're fantastic.
You're welcome for the plug. One of the front runners for the AL MVP stole the show last night at the All-Star game.
Yes.
Vladimir Guerrero won All-Star MVP honors after hitting a 468-foot home run and driving in 2 runs in the AL's 5-2 win. After the game, Vlad said he actually made a promise to his teammates that he would bring home the MVP trophy. He said, they said, you better win the MVP or don't come home. Dreams come true. Since I was a kid, I've been thinking about this moment. I've worked all my life very hard, and thank God it's happening right now. He actually made a special glove with images of him and his dad at the game in the early 2000s because Guerrero and his dad, Vladimir Guerrero Sr., joined Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr. with Bobby and Barry Bonds as the only father-son combinations to win or to hit a home run in an all-star game.
I'm going to throw something out, and baseball seam heads will probably rip me, but baseball's unique. And then at the father-son combos, the kids are often better than their legendary dads. Like Ken Griffey Jr. was better than Ken Griffey Sr. Now, we don't know if Vlad Jr. is better than Vlad Sr. because Vlad Sr. was all that, but he is great. Bonds.
Right.
Okay, Bobby Bonds, Barry Bonds, better than Bobby Bonds. And Bobby Bonds is a good player.
Why would baseball fans be mad about that?
No, I'm just saying, I'm not sure I'm correct on that.
Oh,
but
I mean, it would seem that way, but maybe that's that way in a lot of sports. I think you can find some examples of that in basketball.
Can you?
Yeah. Steph Curry's like transformed the sport.
It just feels like in baseball, the son in the father-son thing is often the star. The dad's good. The son's a star.
I guess I got to think of some more examples in basketball.
I threw it at you. That was
Klay Thompson.
Who's that?
Klay Thompson.
Is better than Michael Thompson? Michael wasn't bad. Michael was a...
Well, I mean, it's not about being bad, but right. Just like how much... are they better? Are they having better careers or have they had better careers? I mean, maybe we just have more examples in baseball. He's also the youngest to homer in the All-Star game since Johnny Bench, who did it in 1969 at 21.
By the way, you baseball fans, go to my social account. Tell me if I'm right or wrong, but it does feel like for whatever reasons, in baseball, the son is better than the dad a lot. We'll see.
So after back-to-back losses, the Team USA put on a dominating performance against Argentina, 108-80.
They were good on the boards.
There's that blowout that Pop was looking for. Durant had looked a little sluggish in the first two games, had 8 points in the first quarter, but finished with 17 points on 6-for-9 shooting. Bradley Beal also hit his first four shots of the night and finished with 17 points as well. And Popovich cited conditioning as the reasons why Team USA faded down the stretch in the two losses. He keeps saying that everyone came a little, not out of shape, like the season just ended, but just not in the conditioning shape that they needed to be in to go on a run.
Well, let's be fair about this. We didn't overreact to this yesterday. Remember, like the Australian team, these guys have been playing together for years and years and years, right? There's only so many great Australian players, right? We have our team changes, our chemistry changes, and it is a weird formation of a team. They have no rim protector. So last night, they actually rebounded well, which is a thing, because they're not terribly big. And it's also, you don't have, like, Zach LaVine, Dame Lillard, Bradley Beal, all gifted. Who's the leader? So we have to be fair about this. We have so many great players in America that we have a new team every time.
Yeah.
And we have new coaches, new players. A lot of these teams, like Argentina for years, had Manu Ginobili, and Australia's got a lot of the same guys, so their chemistry is better. So don't be shocked. In the first handful of exhibition games, we look like blank, and the other teams look a little... by the way, it's not like Australia was great either. It was a sloppy mess.
It was such a sloppy game.
But initially... The other teams have better chemistry, same coach.
Argentina is not as tough as an opponent.
No, they
either.
Used to be.
They're 0-3 in exhibition games, so they used to be much, much better. They'll have a rematch, will Team USA will, with Australia on Friday at 6 Eastern. I didn't think it was anything to overreact to. I just think it was something, and they'll figure it out. But I think the biggest point is who is going to be the face of this Team USA, who's going to be the leader of Team USA.
Yeah.
So Devin Booker didn't have a great showing in Game 3.
He did not.
And he said the first thing he did was to stop thinking about it in order to prepare for Game 4.
Short memory. Just move on. Been there before. You know what I'm saying? So just understanding that, understanding the game, understanding situations that I've been through, and just trusting the work that you've put in. As simple as that. But, you know, my main objective out there is to win the basketball game.
I actually like this mentality. I do think that you need to, you know, review the tape, do a little studying, see what went wrong, see what you can improve on. But to sit around and harp on having a bad game as you're going into the next one is a waste of time.
I tell my kids this. I don't know if I've told you this, not that you need my advice, but I've told my kids about the internet. play offense, not defense. Don't defend your positions. The money, the monetization on social media is scoring. It's not in defending your position. That's why I don't go back and forth with fans. Why? My whole job is to score more, to have more content, because you and I are filling 3 hours a day in July. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to play defense. I'm playing offense. And by the way, I miss shots all the time. I have bad segments. I have bad moments. I have stupid things. And in this instance, as a shooter, Devin Booker, there's no reason to defend a bad night.
Right.
You're a scorer. Go shoot. Steph Curry's had terrible nights. Klay Thompson's had terrible nights. Do not defend your game if you're a scorer. You do not just go score and worry about correcting your offense.
I agree. I think that the criticism of Booker is that if you are having a bad night, since you are a scorer, yeah, how else can you contribute, yeah, so that you can still be on the floor and not be, not that Booker is ever a liability, but that you can be on the floor and, sure, still contribute even if you are not shooting the way that you normally shoot.
Yeah.
Shoot or shoot, whatever, it's cliche, but he has to shoot his way out of this bad, yes, spot. He can't just not shoot anymore. So not having that anxiety and that weight of the last game on you as a shooter is important, but how can you improve your game so, right, that if you are having a bad shooting night that you can still contribute and help win?
For the record, he's 24, 25 years old. He's, yeah, not a complete player yet. There are parts of his game that he's still building his game. So,
and this is his first finals.
Yeah.
I think he'll be fine. The Bucks are favored by 5 tonight, according to Fox.
I like Phoenix plus the points tonight.
I do too.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
So, Nick Wright is my buddy. First things first, he's the big star on that show. He is now joining me live, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So, game four of the finals tonight. Now, it's interesting. Because I am old, I do like, yep, old NBA stories. I tend to like Chris Paul. You know, a couple of veterans in our respective industry. You are flashy and young and going places, and your future's in front of you. And you have put your arms around Giannis in his hideous free throw shooting.
Yeah.
I think this series is going to come down to this. Uh-huh. Last 2.5 minutes, last two games, game 6 and 7, and I got Chris Paul shooting free throws, and you have Giannis. Yet you have been almost bizarrely confident with Giannis going forward. Explain yourself, yeah, young, progressive, smart guy with a great future.
Well, thanks. Appreciate that. And I also adore Chris Paul, and I'm very happy he's gotten to this moment. But this moment is Giannis's moment. So you mentioned NBA history. We don't have to go that far back in the annals of NBA history to see a very similar arc. So if I were to tell you, there was a two-time MVP who hadn't won a championship, who was coming off his lowest playoff moment, who faced multiple elimination games before he even got to the finals, and then left those finals and everyone said, oh, he's clearly and unquestionably the best player in the world. He has solved his demons. You'd say, who am I talking about? That was LeBron in 2012. 2011, they lose to Dallas. He'd already had the couple of MVPs. In 2012, they face elimination, down 3-2 to Boston. He has the 45-15-5, and the rest is history. They beat KD, Harden, and Russ in the finals. Well, Giannis, couple MVPs, down 3-2 to KD in Brooklyn, has the 40-10 in Game 7, including the game-tying shot on KD in overtime, and now, I believe, has taken full control of these finals and is going to leave this season as the best player in the world. Phoenix has no answer for him. And the only game that they've played 5 times this year, they've somewhat slowed him down, was the game where he was 7 days removed from his knee bending the wrong way. So I don't think Milwaukee needs Drew and Middleton to play well. I think they just need one of them to play well, because Giannis is going to do everything he wants. And he's going to average 35-15 in this series. And I believe he's going to leave this series a champion. And at 26 years old, he's going to have a couple MVPs. And he's going to have a title. And I think he's going to go into next season until LeBron could potentially take it back from him. as the best player in basketball.
So you and I think, agree that Daryl Morey takes big swings. Simmons and Embiid don't work. A lot of people are talking about Portland. They need to take a big swing. They're stuck in NBA quicksand. Good, not great. Good, not terrible. But I do think Golden State's fascinating here for a couple reasons, and I'll throw it at you. It's a very good draft. You can go to about the 22nd player, Chris Duarte of Oregon. A lot of people say he's 21, 22. He will play in the NBA. He can shoot. He can make his own shot. Like, he's a real NBA player. So it's, I mean, last year, we got to about the sixth player, and we were like, we didn't know if he was an NBA guy. So, and they were better than we thought. So this is a good draft. And the Warriors have two lottery picks. And they have Andrew Wiggins, who's good, not special. I'm Golden State, you're Philadelphia. Would you take the number one lottery pick, Andrew Wiggins, for Simmons? Is that reasonable to you?
I hang up the phone.
You don't like it?
Okay. No. Here's why. If I'm Daryl Morey, I say to myself, okay, I have a 24-year-old with 4 years left on his contract, who the season before this one was an all-NBA player. This year, almost won Defensive Player of the Year. I already know there are two star guys in Dame and Beal who are borderline unhappy with their teams.
Right.
And knowing NBA history, another guy likely is going to become unhappy with his team. Who is going to be able to come up with a better package than me with Ben Simmons, Tyrese Maxey, who was good as a rookie, and Matisse Thybulle? These were Philly's draft through the last couple of years. Those are good pieces to include in a trade. OKC has all the picks in the world to trade, but Portland's not going to send Dame to OKC. He's been too good for the franchise for them to do that to him. New Orleans has a bunch of picks, and they could include Brandon Ingram in a trade. So they are a possible contender for any of these guys. But Philly almost got James Harden for Ben Simmons 9 months ago. I don't think they are now all of a sudden going to make a trade where it's Brogdon-centric or Andrew Wiggins-centric. I know why Golden State would want to do it, would love to do it. I don't think Philly would do it. And Colin, what I want to throw at you is this. Let's assume I'm right about these finals. Don't you think there might be a number of teams around the league that say, oh, okay, so if you build the right team around a non-shooting scorer, you can go win the title? And don't you think Giannis's success could actually make Ben a more attractive piece for a lot of teams around the league?
Yeah.
Like, because what do we say? We say, Ben, shoot more. With Giannis, it's like, shoot less, buddy. Do what you do. So I think that if Giannis rampages to the title, there might be teams that say, you know what? Embiid and Simmons didn't fit, but Giannis and Embiid wouldn't really fit. Like, and I'm not saying Ben Simmons is Giannis. He's not. But he might be the closest facsimile we have, like 85 to 90% of Giannis.
Yeah.
He's only 24. Put the right pieces around him. So I think that unless Bradley Beal or Damian Lillard are coming to Portland, I think Ben Simmons is starting the year on the Sixers, and Daryl will hold on to him until he can get a true all-star caliber player back.
So yesterday, players, coaches, and executives in the NFL released their top 10 quarterbacks. Oh. Now, my takeaway on the list, I think, was different than yours. My takeaway was, as a dad, it was an incredibly encouraging list. That there is no one way to success. Dak Prescott, fourth round. Russell Wilson, third round. Brady, sixth round. Aaron Rodgers, junior college. Mahomes, non-traditional power, losing record in college. Kyler Murray's 5'9.5". Josh Allen went to Wyoming. My view on it is, isn't this amazing? There is no one way to get to the NFL. Small school, tall, short, run more. Lamar Jackson still has critics. The one exception to that is Matt Stafford. Number one high school quarterback, number one college quarterback, number one draft pick, lousy record. Your takeaway on this list was more about Stafford, not the other guys, I'm told.
Yes, I have two takeaways. Let's start with Stafford, and then I can get to my second one if we have time. Stafford was sixth on this list. He was ahead of Dak. He was ahead of Lamar. He was ahead of everyone except for the top five guys, which were Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady, Russ, and Josh Allen. I like Matt Stafford, and I, like many people, really like the Rams this year. Colin, do you think Matt Stafford's the sixth best quarterback in football? That felt a little premature.
Yeah.
Felt like the Sean McVay glow has already started to rub off on Stafford. He hadn't played a game for him yet. Like, if you are, I'm not a huge quarterback wins guy.
Yeah.
But if you're one of the six best quarterbacks in football, you're not sub 500 over a 5-year stretch. You might have a down year. Don't you think that's a touch high and a little premature with Stafford, Colin?
Yeah, I think I've been told through the years, scouts love him, execs love him. I think it speaks to what the NFL executives are telling you is, good God, the Lions front office and ownership is worse than Cleveland's the last decade. That's what it's telling you, that people think the Lions are an incompetent tire fire. So there you go.
That's right. But I'm glad you mentioned Cleveland, because that's my second takeaway. What's the argument that Kyler Murray, and I like Kyler, should be on this list and not Baker Mayfield? I'm just curious.
Okay.
Like, what you tell me. Tell me the argument.
Well, one is a world-class athlete, and one was a walk-on. Kyler Murray's an unbelievable, he's the only thing in the world that looks kind of like Russell Wilson. He plays a little like Russell. I don't think he's as good as Russell. So I think Kyler Murray's an unbelievable, I mean, God, the guy, be honest, he was a baseball guy, 50% baseball guy, and he still comes into the NFL. And by the way, he had better stats at Oklahoma the year he was at than Baker did, the 1 year.
Well, they both won the Heisman. They both went number one overall in the same system at the same university. Kyler does have the benefit of DeAndre Hopkins and Larry Fitzgerald. Baker, of course, lost Odell. But yes, I agree. I would much rather have Kyler in the decathlon. But it's the NFL. It's playing quarterback. And so Baker's arc is, because their collegiate arcs were very, very similar because they went to the same school, same system, all that. In the NFL, Baker, as a rookie, set records, had a down year two, coached by arguably the least equipped NFL coach ever. As soon as he got a real head coach back, they went to the playoffs, won double-digit games, won a playoff game, and were in the game in the fourth quarter at Arrowhead. And he's doing it all the while he has America's favorite media personality on a daily basis trying to tear him down. Kyler doesn't deal with that. Kyler's got nothing but love from people. Baker's got to deal with a lot of stuff. Again, it's nothing against Kyler particularly. Kyler just came in 10th, and I'm like, we can't get my guy Baker in the top 10.
Okay.
He's not one of the 10 best quarterbacks in football. Seems harsh.
No. Deshaun Watson, by the way, is not on that list, so he could be the argument. But I would say this, and I don't want to be critical of Baker, because I do think I have Cleveland being a very good team this year. I think a lot of that's the offensive line and the coach. These are really good. But I'd say this. Cleveland was better last year the fewer times Baker threw. Okay, that's an important stat. When he threw less, they were better. Secondly, the Kansas City game. Yeah, the Chiefs were missing a guy in most of the second half. A random player, maybe you've heard of him.
I know.
Patrick Mahomes.
It's a little misleading.
Little.
I know. I agree with that. I know. I was thinking it was the end of the segment. You might not get there. Yes, it is true that the Chiefs did seem to be in firm control until Mahomes went down.
Yeah.
But if you're going to hit me with that, then I'm going to hit you with this. That whole, they were better when they threw the ball less, is a first cousin of the stat of, oh, if you get to 40 rushes, you win the game, which is a second cousin of the stat. You know, teams that take knees in the fourth quarter are undefeated. Well, why doesn't everyone do it? Well, it's actually you're taking a knee because you've already won. They are throwing the ball less because they've already gotten a lead, typically by throwing the football. So I don't buy that first part. But the second part is fair, that Mahomes did get hurt, which did affect things.
Kind of.
Yeah, that is true.
So just marginally affect the outcome of the game, yes. Good seeing you, buddy. Nick Wright.
See you, man.
All right. Bye. Top of the hour. I'll talk Browns and the entire AFC. Last year, I was lucky enough. Well, a little luck, a little skill to go 7-for-7 on my playoff picks. We now have 7 teams. That was adopted 2 years ago. We now have 17 games, which, by the way, is a reason. I had this discussion in the airport the other day because somebody came up and asked me about, it could have been the Browns or the Ravens. I think it was a Browns fan. Anytime there's anybody from Ohio that spots me anywhere publicly, they got to come up and ask me questions. And I said, I may like you and think you're an 11-6 team, but I'm going to make you a 10-7 team because I think players are going to rest more. I think GMs are going to rest players more. Undefeated, this whole Tampa Bay is going to go undefeated nonsense. It is zero chance that's happening. There's no way Tampa, that just won a Super Bowl, is going to push all their players to play 17 games. You're going to give your veteran defensive lineman, JPP, you're going to give him a week off late because you want him healthy for the playoffs and rested. So we'll talk about that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Leadership is undervalued. The Suns are in the finals this year, not because they changed their roster. They added a 36-year-old veteran, Chris Paul, who plays about 30 minutes a night. That's it. Leadership, DeAndre Ayton said, I've never played with anybody who challenged me more. Dodgers bring in Mookie Betts. The Dodger players are like, oh my God, lead by example, first in, first around the cage, extra work, it's leadership. Tom Brady, not the fastest, past his prime athletically, though he was never a world-class athlete, goes to Tampa, mostly the same roster, coaches. Tom comes in. We don't really value optimism and leadership and positivity. And that's what Mookie Betts and Brady and Chris Paul do. It's not like Chris Paul's giving you 44 minutes and 39 points. That's not his game. It's not like Brady is extending plays. It's not like Brady has the best arm. You know, Mookie Betts, it's not like Mookie Betts is playing multiple positions. He's the closer or the starting ace. But there is something to be said for constantly lubricating and energizing a locker room. And I thought this was very interesting. You know I love Russell Wilson. The Ringer has a guy named Kevin Clark. We bring him on the show. He's very smart. He interviewed Russell Wilson. And I want you to think about Aaron Rodgers' moodiness and at times sort of condescending nature and snarkiness going into the season. Here's the interview. Just think about being around this. Here is Russell Wilson talking to Kevin Clark, who said, hey, you've got a new coordinator this year. And he start and Aaron, and Russell just starts talking, and he goes, "Oh my God, Shane Waldron, amazing mind, super collaborative. We had a lot of fun. It's been an amazing along the journey. Going to throw more and win more games. We're so excited about it. We think we got a chance to win. We're just going to totally go for it." Compare that to Green Bay. Here's Russell talking about players. He goes, I'm looking forward to DK Metcalf. He's such a young guy. Chris Carson's back. We're so excited to have him. Gerald Everett coming from the Rams, a tremendous football player. How about Dwayne Brown? He's been so dominant since he got here at left tackle. We got a new guard, Gabe Jackson, a physical, dominant player. How about Damian Lewis moving to left guard? I'm so much energy there. These are real quotes. Jamal Adams, he'll be in his second year for the Seahawks. How great will he be? Bobby Wagner, nobody better in the league than him at his position. Plus, he's a great leader. And how about Quandre Diggs? He can make all the plays. I'm so excited getting the guys back and the fans here. These are real quotes. I'm not making this up. Everything's an amazing journey. Every day, positive, optimistic, focused. I mean, if you're a player and Russell Wilson's the best player that franchise has ever had, and he's talking about you in the Ringer like that, what does that make you feel? I'm going to go to the weight room. I can't let him down. I mean, if my boss has talked about our staff like this, you would get in early the next day. You'd be like, oh my God. Russell Wilson's talking about DK Metcalf. He's talking about Chris Carson. I love him back. Oh, I'm so excited for, Damian Lewis going to the left side. You're Damian Lewis. You're like, that's my guy. Compare that to having fun on this golf tournament. I'll figure it out. I don't know. You know, snark, snark, snark. Listen, optimism matters. Chris Paul matters. Mookie Betts, Tom Brady, this stuff. Positivity makes you want to work out harder, energy. I know people say, oh, it's a lot of, you know, sometimes Russell Wilson's over the top. I'll take it. I mean, Tom Brady eats avocado ice cream, won't drink a beer, in a season. It's a little over the top. It works. People want to be around positive people. They energize us. They focus us. They make us feel like guilty for not being in the weight room earlier and not working harder and not putting the time in. I love that's who he is. Think it's fake or not, that's who he is 24/7. It's the Herd.